Good afternoon, and welcome to today's program hosted by the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley. My name is Leslie Saul Garvin. It is my pleasure to introduce Arianna Huffington, author of The Sleep Revolution, Transforming Your Life One Night at a Time. Arianna Huffington is the co-founder, president, and editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post Media Group. She was born in Athens, Greece, and studied economics at the University of Cambridge. In 2005, she co-founded the Huffington Post, which has grown into a Pulitzer Prize-winning international blogging and news aggregation platform. In 2011, she sold the site to AOL and became president and editor-in-chief of the company's Huffington Post Media Group. Arianna has been recognized by Time magazine as one of the 100 most influential people in the world, and by Forbes as one of the world's 100 most powerful women. She serves on numerous boards, including the Center for Public Integrity and the Committee to Protect Journalists. Joining Arianna on stage is Sheryl Sandberg, Chief Operating Officer of Facebook and founder of Lean In. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Arianna Huffington and Sheryl Sandberg.
So I think everyone knows Arianna's bio, but she founded the HuffPost in 2005. It's amazing that it's been over 10 years. It's now one of the most read news sites anywhere in the world with 200 million unique visitors. A few years ago, in the middle of what is an obviously incredible life and incredible career, she fell, went to the hospital, realized there was no illness, just exhaustion. And this has made her a sleep evangelist. Everywhere she goes, she talks about sleep. If she's staying at your house or you're staying at her house or you're out with her for dinner, you can always go to sleep early because she encourages and respects that. Right before dessert, you can just say, hey, I'm out of here. I'm going to sleep. She's like, fantastic. She's written 15 books, and they're incredible. And the newest one is obviously why we're here today, The Sleep Revolution. And she's been a big influence on me, such a dear friend through every part of my life. And also very, very focused on my sleep. You know, most friends call and they say, how are you? She calls and says, so how much sleep are you getting? Darling, how much sleep are you getting? It puts a whole new spin on everything. But I'm so excited to have you in our town and have everyone with us today. So Arianna, you, in this book, you talk about how you grew up in a one-bedroom apartment in Athens, and sleep was revered. Yet, you have a kind of on-again, off-again relationship with sleep, like one of those boyfriends.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you so much for doing this. I know this is a crazy busy time for you with a developer conference going on at Facebook right now. So thank you for being here, and thank you for being such a great friend through every aspect of my life. And so going back to my early years in Athens, Greece, my mother really made sleep a priority. So let's say if I was going to study and my younger sister had to sleep, I had to study in the kitchen. And I had to tiptoe because the three of us slept in that one bedroom, and I had to tiptoe into the bedroom. And she was very upset if I was loud and I woke up Agape, my sister. So there was that reverence around sleep and its importance. But then I went to England where I studied, and then I went to New York, and everything changed because it's almost like you're swimming in a culture that glamorizes sleep deprivation, where saying I'm slammed is an indication of importance. It's like your status means I'm so important I don't have time to sleep. Where people say things like, I'll sleep when I'm dead, you snooze, you lose. And I bought into that culture. I felt that the only way to really achieve and succeed was to just forego sleep until I collapsed. Because the problem with not getting enough sleep is that it has a cumulative effect. And it's a slippery slope. And it works for you until it stops working. And mine stopped working pretty dramatically when I hit my head on my desk and broke my cheekbone. But in a way, I feel very grateful because it could have been so much worse. You know, I mean, we have friends who, like the CEO of United Airlines, who ended up with a massive heart attack on his treadmill, or the CEO of BMW who collapsed on stage. These are all manifestations of exhaustion and burnout.
When you Google, why am I, the first thing you get is so tired. And then what's the second thing you told me?
Why am I always tired?
Which is pretty incredible, right? Why am I alive? Why am I? I mean, there's so many deep questions you could ask with the words, why am I? And the fact that this is one and two is really important.
Well, it's really like the zeitgeist captured in these words. I mean, this is a Belgian philosopher has described burnout as the disease of modern civilization. And for me, it's the problem with it is that it is based on a delusion. It's like people who are climate change deniers. You also have people who are sleep deniers. And there is a professor at UCLA who is comparing sleep deprivation to the new smoking. And he sent me a whole host of ads he has kept collected from the 50s where doctors would advertise cigarettes. They would literally, you would have doctors in white coats saying, I prefer menthol cigarettes because they refresh your throat. And so you realize that our cultures often are in the grip of delusions. We don't recognize them until we're out of them. I mean, we are in the grip of the delusion that the earth is flat. We're in the grip of the delusion that smoking is not a problem. Now we're in the grip of the delusion that if you want to succeed, if you're a type A personality, if you are driven, then you just basically don't get the sleep that scientists tell you you need, which is 7 to 9 hours, unless you are a short sleeper, which is a genetic mutation. Like you either have it or you don't. You can't train yourself, you can't discipline yourself. I actually met this Berkeley scientist who has developed this gene editing, so you can actually choose while your baby is still in embryo in the womb to make it a short sleeper. It's like if you're a super driven parent.
You could give your child
4 hours a night from the beginning, and maybe you can also teach it Chinese while in the womb. But short of that, 7 to 9 hours
is what people need. So you talk a lot about smartphones, and you have a lot to say about the interaction between smartphones and sleep. I saw you say on Jon Stewart that 20% of Americans have their smartphones on during sex.
Yes.
And you've also said that 71% of Americans sleep next to or with their smartphones.
Right. And
you think this is fabulous. A great way to get more sleep.
Actually,
this is what she says after she says, darling, how much sleep are you getting? You're like, is your smartphone down? Is your phone downstairs? Is your phone downstairs?
Yes.
Don't plug your phone in by your bed.
Because basically, your smartphone by your bed is kryptonite. It's like the worst thing you can do for sleep. I mean, as you know, in the second part of the book, there are tons of tools and techniques how to get better sleep. But the one non-negotiable fact is our relationship with technology. I mean, just think of it. Right now, everybody here knows approximately how much battery is remaining on your smartphone.
It's true. I just checked that before I got on the stage.
You know, for me, if it gets below 13%, I begin to get anxious and I look around for a recharging shrine, lest anything would happen to my precious smartphone. But if you had asked me the morning I collapsed, how are you, Ariana? I would have said fine, because I had really forgotten what it is to have a fully recharged battery. You know, that great feeling of being at 100%. And now I so treasure that, and I so do not like my sleep-deprived self. I don't like being more irritable, more cranky, more moody, and all the things that we know go with being sleep-deprived.
It's interesting. Let's take a look from the audience. Raise your hand if you think you, most of the time, get enough sleep. This is good. What would you say, about half? A little more?
About half.
There's probably a selection bias for our sleep talk.
Yeah. But however, that's pretty good, and that's pretty much what the stats are, that over 40% of people are sleep-deprived, according to the latest stats. I think what has happened is that we are now, because of the golden age of science that we are living through, know so much more about how essential sleep is, both for our health and for our brain. I mean, for me, of all the amazing scientific findings I've included in the book, the one I love the most is the one about what happens to the brain. Because we used to think that sleep was a time of inactivity, when our brain would basically be like putting the car in the garage and turning off the ignition. And now we know that it's more like the car becoming a self-driving car and running essential errands for us. And the most essential errand is cleaning up the toxins that accumulate during the day. And I love this. The scientist who came up with that research puts it like that. She says you can either entertain the guests or clean up the house. The brain cannot do both at once. So if you don't clean up your brain, you end up with major consequences, including now they have found a connection between these accumulated toxic proteins between brain cells and Alzheimer's. So there is an interesting kind of parallel with the explosion of sleep deprivation and the explosion of Alzheimer's.
So you've talked here about how we glamorize a lack of sleep.
Yes.
I am really sorry. This is where I was planning on bringing out my pillow that said, sleep your way to the top. Get it? Now that you get it, it's really funny, right? My daughter looked at me. She's 8 and said, what does that mean? I said, well, it means it's very important to get a good night's sleep so you can do well on your exams and get a good job. My new quote has been, sometimes you have to sleep in to lean in.
I love that.
It's not as good as sleep your way to the top, but it's cute. But I find that too. I am a different, more productive, I think more thoughtful person when I get enough sleep at work. How have you been talking to people about the connection between sleep and performance in any job?
So I actually think that that's the best entry point into this discussion, because the reason why we are sacrificing sleep is because we think we're going to perform better and be more productive. And now it's unequivocally clear that the opposite is true. And the more people like you we have making that connection, the faster we'll accelerate this change in the zeitgeist, because people need to be given permission. They need to hear from super successful people that they are more productive, more effective, and get more stuff done when they are fully recharged. And actually, yesterday I was doing a Facebook Live with Travis Kalanick, the founder of Uber, and he's now become a convert. You know, you can't be around me for long without becoming a convert.
It's true.
And he actually said how, as a young entrepreneur, like so many entrepreneurs here in the Valley, he bought into the delusion that he had to stay up all night. And in fact, most of his early efforts were failures. Again, we don't look at that. We don't look at how many startups end up in flames. And now he's so clear that when he's fully recharged, he can handle problems so much faster. He can see shortcuts through problems and build teams more effectively, which is part of leadership. And the most amazing thing that happened 10 days ago, unfortunately too late for me to include in the book, but it was a tipping point, a zeitgeist moment, was McKinsey published a study. And the headline of the study is a proven link between effective leadership and sleep. Now, at first, you think it's an onion headline, you know, coming right from McKinsey, which is like the boiler room of burnout. But they walked through the science of how what happens to our precognitive, to our prefrontal cortex, where all the executive functions are housed, and how degraded they become when we are sleep deprived. And I think that this is really another proof point of the transition we're living through. I think it's as big a transition as moving from the dark ages of sleep to the renaissance of sleep. And like any transition, a lot of different behaviors are coexisting. You still have people bragging about only getting 4 or 5 hours. You still have employers congratulating people for being always on. But you also have all this new behavior happening.
So Winston Churchill, who has all the great quotes, is credited with coining the term power nap. And you've been napping at the HuffPo, and you're doing it in a pretty interesting way. Can you share and talk about why you're doing it?
So first of all, as you know, in 2011, we instituted 2 nap rooms. And at first, people were very reluctant to be seen walking into a nap room because it seemed like they were sleeping on the job.
They hadn't seen the pillow.
Seen the pillow. No, the pillow had not been invented yet. But now they're perpetually full. So in order not to take one of the public nap rooms, since I have a couch in my office, which has a glass wall, so it looks into the newsroom, I actually sleep when I'm jet-lagged or for whatever reason I didn't get my 8 hours, have a nap on the couch. And I used to close the curtains, and now I keep them open because I feel that it helps remove the stigma that there's absolutely no problem in having a nap instead of going to have a 5th cup of coffee or a 3rd donut or whatever it is that we have. No, it's okay.
Tell her about the coffee.
No, I love coffee.
It's my first for the record, but it is a really big one. But it's half-calf.
No, I actually...
So it counts as one.
I love coffee, and there's no problem with having coffee before 2 p.m. It's the caffeine after 2 p.m. that gets in the way. This is not about becoming a Puritan. It's about checking what is it that gets in the way of your sleep. And coffee has never gotten in the way of my sleep unless I have it at dinner.
You mentioned meeting Travis, and I know you did a great contest with Uber. A contest, right? People could request a ride,
yes,
with you or Travis and talk about sleep. But you're doing this for a reason, which is you're very worried about drowsy driving, which you say is causing more accidents than drunk driving.
Because
and that's a real concern, because
yeah,
it's a little hard to see through how we get rid of drowsy driving.
Well, that's what happened. Since the 1980s, when we started increasing awareness about drunk driving and launching the designated driver campaign, death,
MAD,
yes.
One of the best MAD. Before social media, probably the best example of a social media campaign anyone had seen.
Exactly, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And because of all that, deaths because of drunk driving have been halved. It's just such a wonderful example of how what is really a social media campaign has worked. So we want to do the same around drowsy driving. So we partnered with Uber because one of the reasons why it's now easier to avoid driving while drowsy is because of the ride-sharing technologies that make it possible to summon a car wherever you are. But the problem is that most of us know when we're drunk, unless we're very, very drunk.
She doesn't mean us. She means other people.
But so often, we power through, or we think we can power through when we're tired. Yes, exactly. You think, I'll have a coffee and power through. I'll have a Coke and power through. And it takes 2 seconds of micro-sleep for a crash to happen. And there were 1.2 million crashes last year and 8,000 deaths. And we did a very powerful PSA that you can see if you go to change.org, where you can take the pledge not to let friends drive drowsy. You know how you can tell if somebody is tired? Just say, don't drive. Call an Uber or...
Call a friend.
Call a friend.
It's really important. So you're also running a contest on Airbnb that I love. And the winner, they have to write an essay. And I think the essay is, what would you do with a great night's sleep?
Yeah, basically, what would you do... with your day after a great night's sleep? What would be different in your day? And it's an essay under 550 words, if anybody wants to participate. And the winner is flown from wherever they are by Virgin Air to New York to spend the night in my sleep paradise in my apartment. It's so funny because I was saying that to friends at your house the other day, and Kara Swisher has now entered the competition.
Has she?
Yes.
That's great.
So sleep also has a real link to poverty and to economic growth, right? When you think about people who are really strapped to make ends meet, trying to work more than one job, it's even harder to get a good night's sleep. We know that especially single mothers, other people who are struggling, are working multiple jobs, and many of those jobs have night shifts. So how do we think about the link between sleep and poverty as a society?
So it's actually a very important link. And I held a clinic in a church that we took over in Harlem 10 days ago. And we invited everybody in the community to come in and find out about sleep. And we had doctors and we had a sleep fair. And we gave people things like eye masks and earplugs that, especially in very noisy neighborhoods, can make a difference. But it was kind of heartbreaking to hear just how little everyone I talked to understood the dangers of sleep deprivation. Basically, I mean, let me just give you one story. There was this woman in her 30s who was a pastry chef and a babysitter. And she said to me, I get home after work, and this is my time, I'm quoting exactly, to watch my shows. And she said, I watch TV for about 4 hours. I fall asleep watching TV. Then at some point in the night, the TV wakes me up. And I have a hard time falling back asleep. And so I go to the kitchen and have something sweet. The woman has diabetes in her 30s. And it's so simple. I'm working with her. In fact, we had her on Dr. Oz's show last week to talk about the changes in her life, to actually explain that the fact that as a result of that she's perpetually exhausted is not surprising because she thought it meant that she's not as energetic as all the high flyers she had heard about on Wall Street who can run companies and make billions, you know, on 4 hours sleep. So you first have to dispel all these myths and recognize that while, of course, a lot has to be done politically, a lot has to be done economically in terms of better jobs, in terms of minimum wage, changing our sleep habits is free, available, and can make an incredible difference to our health and to our resilience right now. And all that it requires is a new awareness and some tips and techniques how to do your life differently. Because it's surprising to hear, but so true, we can look at our own lives. We all have more discretionary time than we think.
Absolutely. So at Lean In, we talk a lot about chore play. What we mean is that if you want to improve outcomes for your children, if you want to improve your relationship, doing more in the home, particularly for men in heterosexual relationships, so they're really full partners, will lead not just to a better relationship and healthier, happier, more successful children, but also, as a bonus, you can have more sex.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we talk a lot about the link between actual equal partnership
and more sex,
and that's important. You talk in this book about the link between sleep and sex, and that's a little bit counterintuitive, too, for a lot of obvious reasons.
Actually, the links are incredible. And if you think of it, not so counterintuitive because, if you remember the last time you were sleep deprived, maybe right now, the last thing on your mind is sex, right? It's like you're too exhausted.
Well, you want coffee and a donut.
You want coffee and a donut, yes. Actually, your body does crave
correct. Coffee and a donut.
Sugar and carbs. Is it out?
It's out, yeah.
Shall we send somebody to get a reinforcement?
<We're good. laughs> Donuts for everyone.
So, I mean, now they've done endless studies about how, in fact, I love all these specific results of these scientific studies, but according to one study in the UK, 1 hour more sleep means that you are 14% more likely to get sex. There you are.
There you go.
1 hour more sleep. Also, as I told Stephen Colbert, orgasms are Mother Nature's Ambien. So, got that? They help you go to sleep. And we just launched today a Discover channel on Snapchat called Recharge, which is all about sleep and college students. And we have fun things like three young women having a discussion where they ask each other, what's his number? And you think they're talking about something else. But they're actually, I used to date a 5, and it was really terrible. And now I'm dating a 7, and it's fantastic. And it's how many hours sleep they get.
Great.
Because the point is that there is a direct connection between sleep deprivation and erectile dysfunction. So it's also nature's Viagra. So basically, guys, get more sleep.
Both the Beatles' Let It Be, the periodic table of elements, so many things in society and science are inspired by dreams. How do you think about dreams, and how do dreams help us with creativity and invention? And we note that in order to have them, we have to be sleeping.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not just sleeping, but also sleeping enough. Because when you're sleep deprived, you don't remember your dreams. So amazing inventions and an amazing number of scientists, like the Russian chemist who came up with the periodic element of elements, as you mentioned, Paul McCartney, who came up with Let It Be. Larry Page says he came up with the idea of Google in a dream. I'm sure you came up with something profound that you're going to tell us in a dream. So it happens a lot. And when you don't come up with great insights, you process a lot of things in your life. Winston Churchill wrote about this great dream he had when he was visited by his father, who never really believed in him. And he came to his studio where Winston Churchill was painting, and it was after he had won the war, and his father was saying things to him like, it's a pity you never really did anything in politics. And so, you know, he was processing his own, pain at the fact that he had never been recognized by his father. But it's really great, whether it is coming up with a great insight or processing painful experiences or anxieties about being late or whatever it is that our recurring dreams are about, to allow that time for this processing.
I think everyone here is convinced. Who wants more sleep? Now, I note that's more hands than the people who said they were getting enough, which a little bit undercuts the first answer. How?
If
people
exactly
want to get more sleep, so we should take our smartphones and put them downstairs or in another room, not by our beds.
Right. But the first thing...
downstairs. We should not watch TV in the middle of the night. No eating sweet things.
Right. But the first and most important thing is to absolutely convince ourselves of why it matters. Because the pressures on us not to get enough sleep are so great that we are not going to stay with new habits unless we truly convince ourselves that it matters. And that's why I structured the book like that. First of all, knowing what the crisis is, then understanding the new science that makes it conclusive, that performance improves with sleep, and then understanding why we started devaluing sleep in the history chapter, going back to the first industrial revolution. And only then are you allowed to get dessert, which is the how-to chapter that gives you a whole menu of things that you can do, the little habits you can introduce in your life, micro steps, nothing dramatic that can truly transform your life by getting enough sleep. So let me tell you my own ritual, because the most important thing is to create a little ritual, a transition to sleep, the way we do with our children, when, you know, we give them a bath, we put them in their PJs, we read them a story. We need to do something for ourselves. And each one of us has to create a personalized ritual. Mine is to turn off my devices, charge them outside my bedroom, lower the lights, have a hot bath with Epsom salts and flickering candles. I just love it, which I prolong if I'm particularly anxious. Actually, being like a kind of multitasker, I also make it useful time. I take my makeup off in the bath, so that way, you know, you use the time instead of being by the sink. Then I wear nightshirts or PJs or something other than my gym clothes, because I used to sleep in my gym clothes. And my brain was getting these conflicting messages. Are we going to the gym? Are we powering down? And in bed, I only read physical books that have nothing to do with sleep. You know, like Rumi, you know, my favorite poet, who said, live life as though everything is rigged in your favor. And or philosophy or spiritual books or novels, but not even modern novels. I want to read things that take me away from my everyday life. So I may read Trollope or Jane Austen or something that is kind of more evergreen and therefore helps my brain slow down and disconnect. And so if you take the book home and you fall asleep while reading it, it will be a personal victory for me.
All right, so we're going to do one more thing. We're going to do a lightning round, really short answers, and then we're going to invite the audience to ask questions. So think about your questions. Midnight snack or morning coffee?
Oh, definitely morning coffee.
United States or Greece?
That's like asking me to choose between Christina and Isabella, my two daughters.
I don't have that in there. Favorite place to get the news other than the HuffPo?
So actually, favorite place right now are places like the Harvard Business Review or the Stanford Business Review. There are places that are unlikely, that have amazingly cutting-edge stuff that will actually enter the mainstream
eventually,
a month or a year later.
Writing or reading?
Right now, reading. I'm done with writing for the moment.
Guilty pleasure?
Guilty pleasure is the hot bath I mentioned.
That's too good for you.
Is
like
it?
A real guilty pleasure.
Like a real guilty pleasure?
That's like
pleasure.
Helping you go to sleep, like a guilty pleasure.
Like something
like a
really,
bad TV show or
something
ice cream
really
or...
naughty. Oh!
I think
oh
ice
my
cream.
God, I found it. You know, but, I had never, ever, ever tasted it before. But can we go back there? Dairy Queen.
Dairy Queen. I took, not even so long ago, maybe 6 months ago, I took Ariana to Dairy Queen because she had never been there. And I love Dairy Queen. And I didn't understand how anyone could never have been to Dairy Queen. And you know there's one on Woodside Road, yeah?
You know, it was so
loved
funny
it.
Because we went
delicious.
There. And I was thinking to myself, okay, I'll just have like a little bit. I'll have a couple of spoonfuls. And I ate every single...
It was great. Scariest thing you've ever done?
Actually, in a way, the scariest thing was launching HuffPost in my 50s because there were so many people, including so many of my friends, who thought this was ridiculous because, you know, the internet...
Who was going to read the news online?
Who was, yes. And also, you know, the internet is a young person's business. You have your career. You're writing your books. Why are you taking this risk? It's going to be humiliating. My children were begging me not to call it the Huffington Post because they thought it would be a huge embarrassment.
Good for you. All right, secret talent.
Oh. So, secret talent is that I'm actually not a bad country singer.
Something you always take with you when you're on the road?
Oh, I always take a book, a physical book.
Kindle or print, you answered that. If you could time travel, where would you go? Backward or forward?
I would actually go back to these amazing Egyptian temples where they had special sleep chambers.
Person living or dead you'd most like to have dinner with?
I definitely want to have dinner with Thomas Edison, who, as well as inventing the light bulb, got it all wrong about sleep. And he thought sleep was an absurdity, that in the future it would be eliminated. So I'd love to have dinner with him and show him the latest research and have him prove that he was wrong. And then...
Ariana wants to go fight Thomas Edison. Most recent dream you had?
So, you know about that, but so it's a recurring dream that I have again and again, different variations, and I'm on a train going home to God, bear with me, And on the train, in my compartment, are my friends, my closest friends and my family. And everything that happens in my life is like scenery. You know, there is ugly scenery and there is beautiful scenery, like a train journey, except it's my life's journey. And pain happens when I cling to the scenery, either the painful things or even the joyful things, because everything changes. And when I cling to something and want it to stay exactly like it is, or I want it to never have happened, that's when it's painful. And there was a variation on the dream recently, which was amazing, which was that I had this recognition that if there is if you discover there is a toxic person in your compartment, somebody has gotten on who really is toxic for your life, as soon as you get to the next station, get them off the train.
What do you do? What do you do when you get writer's block?
I actually go for a walk. I find that when I'm in LA, I love to go for a hike, which is better because it's more strenuous and it clears your mind. But in Soho, where I live now in New York, I just go for a walk in the neighborhood.
Go to comfort food.
Go to comfort food. Oh, my God. Mm. It's this amazing Greek sweet. It's normally Greeks only make it for Christmas. It's called Melomakarona. And the really good version of it is made with amazing Greek honey and walnuts. And it's like nothing you have ever eaten before. And but my mother used to make it at all times because she believed that if you didn't eat every 20 minutes, something terrible would happen to you.
Favorite piece of technology?
So right now, my favorite piece of technology is my little Jawbone app that I'm wearing, and it tracks my sleep, and it and it tells me how much deep sleep I got, etc. And they actually make it rather pretty in many colors.
Best word to describe you?
It's a hyphenated word. Is that okay?
Hyphenated, it's fine.
Work in progress, which is really good to remember because I used to be a terrible self-judgmental perfectionist and I would tear myself apart after everything I did. And when I started seeing myself as a work in progress, who's going to make mistakes along the road, it became incredibly liberating.
Last book you read?
I've read this great book by Sherry Turkle, who is an MIT professor, called Reclaiming Conversations, in which she talks about how technology gets in the way of real conversations, and that if you're having dinner with someone, she's done the study, even if your phone is on the table, but you don't pick it up, it changes the nature of the conversation. Because the other person unconsciously will be more reluctant to really be vulnerable, open up, because suddenly the phone may intrude. She has amazing data and beautifully written.
Favorite TV show?
Actually, my favorite TV show is The Super Soul Sunday. Have you watched it?
Of course.
It's on OWN, it's the show that Oprah does with all sorts of people who have a kind of exploring different aspects of a spiritual journey. And I've discovered a lot of new people. She has a lot of young people there. That's my favorite.
All right, last one. Best piece of advice you've ever received?
My mother has this kept saying one thing, which was don't miss the moment. She said to me once before she died, when she saw me opening my mail, that's how long ago it was, and talking to my children at the same time, and she said, I abhor multitasking. And when she died, in fact, we scattered her ashes in our garden in Los Angeles, and we have a little bench in the garden that says, don't miss the moment.
And we'll open it up.
Is this on? I can try and project. Okay, great. Ariana, thank you so much for being here, and Cheryl for having this session. This is a phenomenal topic that's very resonant for me. The question I have is, if I'm an entrepreneur, and I know that you said put the smartphone inside your bed, you can turn it off, but the one thing I can't turn off is my mind.
Yes.
So any tips you have on kind of calming the mind before you go to bed so you can get more rest?
Well, first of all, you recognize what the problem is. And the key is to have a transition to sleep. Because probably, like most people, you just are on your smartphone until the last moment, and then you turn off the light. Or you are watching TV and you turn off the light. And then it's you have not given your brain the time to power down. So create your own transition. I have a lot of examples in the book. You heard what mine was. But never just turn off the light and go to sleep without giving your time this opportunity to power down. And also in the book I have an index with 12 meditations. Even if you don't personally meditate, it doesn't matter. They are designed to help you slow down your brain. And you can also play them. If I ever wake up in the middle of the night, I'll play one of these meditations. We have one actually that on my book site, arianahuffington.com, that I wrote with my sister, and she is reading it, and she sounds exactly like me. So I can put you to sleep anytime you want.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much.
Actually, would you tell us your name?
Oh, of course.
And if you want, you can tell us how many hours sleep you got last night.
Probably five. So I definitely need to read your book. I already have your book, and I also want to say thank you. And in honor of Cheryl, I am the founder of Lean In Latinas, Ana de Pella Garcia, so I'm super happy to have both of you here. But what has come up in our Lean In circle are young women are really anxious, and because of this anxiety, it compromises their sleep. And so I have a Lean In meeting this Saturday, and I'd love to share with them sort of any suggestions you have for being young and wanting to do it all and having all this energy and anxiety, but it's affecting their sleep.
Why don't you take that?
I think the best advice is what Ariana said, is that we think that there's a disconnect, that, you know, if you want to do better and lean in more, you need to do as much as possible, stay up as late as possible. It's not true. I learned this from Ariana and also from being a mother. What I figured out when I had children was pretty much no matter what else was going on, if my kids had a good night's sleep, you know, as babies, as infants and toddlers, they were great. And if they didn't, it was a mess, and they were crying, and they would argue. And really, everything else that was happening was absolutely less important than sleep. And then I realized that was kind of true of me, too. That with a good night's sleep, no matter what the world throws at me, I mean, some things are harder than others and take longer to get over, but you can get through the day in a stressful situation at work with a good night's sleep. That same situation at work with less of a night's sleep, I handle one much better than the other, just like my children. And so I think recognizing that they will be more effective, more productive, be able to lean in more is the right answer. And this is, I think, really, really critical.
In fact, that is such a great metaphor. I'd never thought of that. And you read the book in draft, and you gave me line by line edits, but you didn't tell me that about. That would have been a great thing to include because it is so true. It's like we see everybody who is a parent sees that every day, so we just need to project it to ourselves.
Yeah, there's this book, one of the baby books I read. I think The Happiest Kid on the Block. Right? And you look at the book, you're like, okay, I want the happiest kid on the block. And then if you read the book, my memory of it is all it says is get your kid enough sleep. That's it. Which is difficult as an infant, but that is the message, and I think it's true.
Hi, Ariana and Cheryl. Can you hear me?
All right. Yes.
Hi, my name is Preeti Padman, and after a long time, I got 7.5 hours of sleep yesterday.
Wow.
So that was
you
good.
You must have had a big sleep deficit, right?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I did. My question for you, snoring spouses or family members, any tips?
Snoring? What did she say?
Snoring spouses.
Oh, wow.
Earplugs.
I have a whole section on sleeping together. And I have a very radical idea, which is if you want the best relationship you can have, you need to get your sleep. And if you are sleeping with a snoring partner or a partner who comes to bed with the iPad or a partner who sleeps with the dogs or a partner who has to get up at an ungodly hour and doesn't know how to do it without completely waking you up, sleep separately. And this is better for everything, including sex. Because what happens is that you begin to build up resentment without even knowing it. And that's the worst thing for a relationship. I was doing a podcast the other day, and the host, who's like also an extreme athlete and this great guy, he said to me, I need the temperature to be at 60 degrees. My wife needs it to be at 70 degrees. That became such a bone of contention. He said that I would totally, totally resent her. It affected our life, including our sex life. We did not have a second bedroom. So what I did is I put a tent in the terrace and I sleep there.
Earplugs.
And he said our life is so much better. So whatever you need to do, just don't buy into the delusion that that means your relationship isn't good or your marriage isn't good. Just do whatever it takes to actually get the sleep you need.
Earplugs.
Earplugs.
Noise. Might be less drastic.
Yes, or yeah. noise canceling headphones.
So, Ariana and Cheryl, my name is Nithya Ruff, and it's absolutely delightful and a pleasure to be here. I think I got my requisite 7 to 8 hours last night, so I'm doing just fine. My frontal cortex is, you know, all charged up. So my question is twofold. One, what's the linkage between lack of sleep and obesity? And my second question is, one of the biggest struggles I have and a lot of people have is jet lag. So whenever we fly, sleep gets disrupted. It's hard to kind of get back to your normal pattern. I wonder if you cover that in your book.
Yes, I cover both in the book. In terms of weight, the connection is very explicit, so much so that if you had to choose between going to the gym and sleeping enough, choose sleeping enough if all you care about is your weight, because of all that happens hormonally when you are sleep deprived that affects your weight. In terms of jet lag, I have very, very specific instructions how to deal with jet lag, from what to eat on the plane, what not to eat, to how to put yourself to sleep on the plane with a little kit that includes all the things you need, and also all these meditations that are very soothing and can help your brain slow down.
Wonderful, thank you.
Hi ladies, my name's Natalie and I'm from Paid Leave for the United States. 90% of Americans go back to work within about 12 weeks of having a baby, and this is segueing to what you were talking about, mothers with their children who are much better behaved when they've had a good night's sleep. What is your advice for the vast majority of Americans who go back to work within 3 months of having a baby and are sleep deprived by nature of the fact that they have a child at home and a full-time job that they need to return to?
Well, you may want to talk about your great maternity policy.
Well, Facebook, we give, you know, both 4 months of maternity and paternity leave. I mean, at least for me in my life, and you're the expert, so you should answer, having a baby was the ultimate sleep challenge because they just wake up every couple hours and want to eat from you. but eventually, I mean, we followed a bunch of these sleep books, and eventually our kids got a good night's sleep. I also think when I look at my friends who are parents who have established that sleep is really important with their kids. There are just parents whose kids wake them up all night and parents whose kids mm-hmm. don't. And some of that is the kids, and obviously there are situations with special needs. But some of it are just the habits you have at home. You know, I have friends who have the hour-and-a-half routine to get their kids in bed, and that hour-and-a-half routine is a lot of variability. Like, sometimes the kid doesn't want to go to bed, and there are parents who have strict bedtimes. And it really depends what you're prioritizing and how much you prioritize sleep. But certainly having real bedtimes in our house has been really important.
And I think another thing for the early months that I found incredibly important is having a little support tribe, you know, a little tribe. If your parents or your parents-in-law are not nearby, friends who can come in and support you during that time, because it is the most challenging time. You have to keep remembering that they will grow up. But in the meantime, you know, having a friend who can come in the afternoon so you can have a nap, all those things help. You can't do it alone.
Thank you for coming to Silicon Valley. I noticed I'm the only male asking a question. Yeah. almost. Which is, sorry, there's a few.
Only male asking a question.
Only male asking
except
for now.
No, one behind you, sorry.
Okay. Thank you for coming. We spoke before. We are a startup, obviously, from Silicon Valley, and we track sleep. So our goal is to actually empower people to track their sleep and bridge the gap between medical devices where you have to plug 20 different electrodes to your head and actual comfortable mask useful for jet lag. And we spoke...
Is there a question?
There's a question. We spoke over email regarding the mask, and is there a way to have pushed the research and have people actually use consumer devices that you could recommend? The job one you mentioned, it's not picking up any of your brain signals and stuff like that. And we have a special mask for you, too.
Well, thank you so much. Well, first of all, we would love you to write about it on the Huffington Post. We have a dedicated sleep section with all the latest technologies. And also, if you wanted to become part of our college, too, we have sleep fairs in 100 colleges. And we have all these latest products there to show them to the students, as well as traditional things like pajamas and eye masks. And so we make it fun for them, and we teach them along the way. And if you go to any to my Facebook or Instagram or anything, and look at the Sleep Revolution hashtag, you'll see tons of students taking pictures with all these new things. So we'd love you to be part of it.
Hi, my name is Radhika Reddy. I'm a light sleeper on weekdays, but I totally catch up over the weekend. Does this affect your health over time in the long run?
So scientists say that obviously catching up is important because when we're in sleep deficit, our body needs it. But for optimal performance, you need to get the amount of sleep you need every night. So the best metaphor for that was given to me by Professor Ronenberg, who is the top sleep scientist in Germany. And he said it's like putting the laundry in the laundry machine. And in order to get clean laundry, you have to let the laundry go through all the cycles. If you get the laundry out before all the cycles have been completed, you end up with wet and dirty laundry. So isn't that a little bit how we feel when we wake up before we are fully recharged? And that's also the problem with the word alarm. You know, alarm is really an alarming word. So it means we wake up in a fight or flight mode before anything bad has even happened.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Hi. I got my 7 hours last night, so that's good for me. So my question is, I'm a night person with a day job, so what do you have any advice for us night people out there who just can't turn it off, even though I know something's going to happen the next day?
So Jan Elpers is a fantastic massage therapist, and she's worked on me many times. So you know my sister Agape too, she's a night owl. And I write in the book about how she changed her habits, you know, saying I'm a night person, because she was exhausted all morning and could not really be as productive or enjoy her life. So the truth is that every scientist will tell you that the optimal time to go to sleep is before midnight. And there is a lot of kind of poetry around it, like catching the midnight train, you know, making sure that you're not left behind. And I remember all the nights when I would be left behind, trying to keep my eyes open by either eating when I wasn't really hungry, or playing loud music, or all these things we do to power through when we would have been much better off to go to sleep and do whatever we're doing at night in the morning.
Nice to see you. Hi, my name is Betty Sue, and I have a 2-year-old daughter, and I just gave birth to my son a month ago. But my question doesn't have anything to do about sleep. I was just curious who one of your favorite person is that you've met, and maybe someone that you'd like to meet. I mean, of course, besides Cheryl, one of your favorite people.
So, you know, I'm very blessed to have met some extraordinary people. Right now, my favorite person is Andre Iguodala. mm-hmm. tonight, right, is the big night to break the Chicago Bulls record. So I actually did a video with him yesterday.
It's also Kobe Bryant's last game.
Yes.
Tonight, the Lakers. Just a bit of basketball trivia up here.
But, you know, it's kind of amazing because they both have become sleep evangelists. And in the book, I have a whole section on Andre and how his stats dramatically improved since he started sleeping for 8 hours, and what he does and how he puts himself to sleep. And yesterday he and I did a conversation on the court where he practices. It was dramatic. He tried to teach me how to dribble and do all that. I did not do well. But having somebody like him talk about the performance benefits of sleep is huge, because people may not listen to me or to Dr. Demand from the Stanford Sleep Center, but they will listen to Andre.
Hi, I'm Mamta Narayan, and I get 8 hours of sleep regularly, but my 15-year-old, on an average, does not get more than 6 to 6.5 hours of sleep. Everyone is aware that our teenagers, the coming generation, is barely sleeping. The educators are aware. So the awareness is there. Do you have any plans to fix the system so that we are not raising a generation? A generation that is so sleep deprived, so that we don't have more drowsy deaths due to teenagers, because they are aware they are sleep deprived, but they can't do it.
Absolutely. That's really why we are doing this college campaign. And we do want to also address teenagers and schools. I have a section in the book where I talk about the need for schools to start later. I mean, schools start way too early. And we have the science now that shows the circadian rhythms of teenagers are different than ours. So we need to take that into account. But the most important, the biggest key here is the relationship with technology. We need to change the awareness around creating a boundary with technology in order to recharge and feel better the next day.
Address it to the educators and administrators?
Yes, absolutely. Every college fair involves the wellness department or the health officials as well as the students.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
You get the last question.
Okay. My name is Rebecca Altamirano. Hi. I got 8.5 hours of sleep last night. And my question is, you know, if we had friends or loved ones or colleagues who had a substance abuse problem, we would put them in a program, you know, or we'd stage an intervention. And so I have friends and colleagues who, some of them think that they're these short sleepers, but they're not, you know, because they're combative and difficult and forgetful. But they're also in the no problem zone, where they think that they don't have a problem. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I can fix my sleep and I'm the only person I can control, but what do I do for other people who I actually have to interact with, who have this, they're in this no problem zone with not getting enough sleep?
So basically, how do you do a sleep intervention without being the sleep police,
right,
and becoming kind of obnoxious for our friends? I think, unfortunately, the only way is to take your copy of The Sleep Revolution, underline some key passages, and give it to them, or email them to them, because you need to convince them intellectually first. So depending on what kind of friend you have, if the friend is a sports enthusiast, send him the info on Andre. If the friend is very mental and data-driven, send him or her the scientific information. If your friend cares only about their appearance, send them all the information about Carly Kloss and Christy Brinkley and Jennifer Aniston, who swear by sleep as the best beauty product. So depending on how you can get to them, send them that information, because at least it's less invasive. They can read it and respond accordingly. And those of you who didn't get to ask a question but were standing there, I'll give you my email address, and please email me and I'll answer it. It's Ariana, 1 R 2 N's, @HuffingtonPost.com. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Wow. Well, I know you all enjoyed this afternoon's program brought to you by the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley. Again, a big thank you to Arianna Huffington, author of The Sleep Revolution, Transforming Your Life One Night at a Time, Sheryl Sandberg, COO of Facebook and founder of Lean In, our wonderful audience here in Santa Clara, and those of you joining us on the radio and web. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club, celebrating 113 years of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.